Live and in color from the NBC News Radio Broadcasting Studios of KCAA, 1050 AM, 102.3 FM, and 106.5 FM, located in beautiful Southern California, and in parallel from the Turf's Up Radio Studio in Fort Lauderdale, Florida. Thanks for tuning into the Water Zone Show this evening.
Good afternoon. This is the Water Zone. Greetings to everybody around the world, and welcome to the Water Zone. I'm your host, Rob Starr, along with the other super host, Mr. Chris Davey, and we're here to walk you through a great show today. We have a great guest coming up, and we should have a lot of good conversation going, so we appreciate that. So, Mr. Davey, as always, how are you doing today?
Great. Thank you very much, and that was right there. Your intro at the beginning there kind of scared me a bit, Robin. That was a good one. It reminds me of the old 50 TV shows, right, where they'd come on with that really low voice and stuff. But you're right. We got a great show today, kind of like the second part of our water scarcity series, if you will, Rob, with a great guest coming on. So that'll be interesting to hear a little bit later on here. But we have the other Chris back with us this week.
Yes, and thank goodness she's back today, and I heard she was out being incognito at different things, and we won't get into that because she's not supposed to tell anybody she was there, I think.
Well, you know...
No.
I'm kidding.
Rob, you've got to remember, you can never be incognito. You can never go to incognito by yourself. You've always got to go to incognito with someone else.
That's right.
No, that's cahoots. You can only go to cahoots with somebody else.
In cahoots is a pet supply place.
In cahoots!
They have. Well, welcome, Miss Chris Davey, who is the purveyor of the wonderful Maven's Notebook. And
excuse me, who is the purveyor?
You.
Of Maven's, you just said Chris Davey. Now you're confusing everybody. Rob's having a senior moment.
You both make me laugh all the time. I can't be straight when I'm with you. Anyway.
I never have a senior moment. Not me.
No. So here's the wonderful purveyor of Maven's Notebook, Miss Chris Austin. I'm sorry about that.
Yeah, I didn't realize Chris Davey was vying for my job, but hey,
He's a prolific writer as well.
Yeah, sure. And a fisher, too. So.
Yes.
Well, I just got back from Sacramento today, where I attended the Association of California Water Agencies annual conference, and my goal was to be a lurker. So I was fine to be there. I just decided that I was just going to go and attend the sessions, and that was it. So I did, And as it so happened, the governor showed up at the conference. I was not there for it, but he did. And he said
he was disappointed that he couldn't find you.
But yeah, right. But he was there standing up for the climate change adaptation, calling the Delta Conveyance Project the Delta Tunnels, it's a climate adaptation project, and he expressed some unequivocal support for the project, which is, I think, more than he's done in the past. So that was a bit of a surprise. Now, it didn't get any press, and I wasn't there, and I haven't seen anybody else grumbling about it, but that's what I'm told on very good authority. He said it was the talk of the conference afterwards in all the other sessions. So we'll see. Also yesterday, as the governor was expressing his unequivocal support for the project, well, some of the project opponents were expressing their unequivocal dissent and filing a number of motions for an injunction against the project, because they say that according to the 2009 Delta Reform Act, which does address the Delta Tunnel project, that before they can start implementing the project, they have to get another permit, basically a permit approval from the Delta Stewardship Council. It's not really an approval. they have to file a certification of consistency and then give the chance for the public to appeal that certification of consistency. And this is California Water, and this is probably the most controversial project that we have. So, of course, they will appeal that certification of consistency. And they say they have to do that first before they implement the project. And they say that the Department of Water Resources is implementing the project because they want to, they are trying to do geotechnical investigations or drill bores to see what the geology is along the path of the tunnel alignment. And they call that implementing the project. And so they have now filed, there were at least three yesterday. I'm sure there's probably some others joining in. So, we'll see. That case is set to be heard before the end of the month. I actually think it might be on May 31st that they have a date where the judge is going to see if he'll grant an injunction. So, you know, onward we go with the Delta Tunnel project. It's been around for decades, and it's hard to see it. If they don't build it now, it's hard to see where we will go from here.
I think this time in this era today, that there's more jobs going to be coming up in the law side. If you look on television for all the lawsuits that are happening, I mean, it's like every day there's no shortage of lawsuits going on.
Well, in California Water, we always have lawsuits, you know. Although what's interesting to me is that in the last 2-3 years, we've really had almost kind of an exodus of NGO groups and kind of some of the ones that litigate a bunch. Mm-hmm. Are not really active in California anymore. So in a sense, you know, there almost seems like there's possibly less lawsuits around. But there will always be lawsuits in California Water. It's just, it comes with the territory. So, kids, if you want a job and, you know, you want job security, become a water lawyer in California. You will do really well.
Yep. So what's some good news or bad news that's happening around California this week in dealing with water?
I thought there was a very interesting article in today's Daily Digest that I just couldn't bear to bury at the bottom about a group in San Diego that is opposing a cemetery. It's in a kind of a remote area, and it happens to be a Muslim cemetery that they want to build there. And there's concern that they're going to be, you know, burying people there, and that's going to affect the aquifer. And part of the concern is, I guess, a Muslim burial sort of tradition is, isn't they're not in a casket, they're just in a shroud. Although the cemetery has said, and they're not embalmed, but the cemetery has said that they're willing to work around that if that bothers people. But then, you know, other people have been objecting because they talk about the amount of pollution that cemeteries can generate from, internal implants, residue from medical treatments like chemotherapy, organisms that are in your body, all these things are going to leak into the aquifer. Now, I have never really heard objections to cemeteries. Well, I haven't really heard objections to cemeteries at all. So in the, 16 years I've been doing this, this is kind of a first. And I thought it's kind of interesting. So,
Well, I got to believe this stuff happens. I mean, the Muslim faith has funerals almost like everybody else, almost every day. And this is the first time, personally, that I heard of that. I don't object to that. But I think before people start screaming and raising their heads and all this other things, we need to have somebody or some organization do some reputable fact-finding to do this, because I'm sure, you know, people have been buried for many, you know, I'll even say hundreds of years here with that. And we can't be, you know, we shouldn't be cruel to somebody with their burial rights. I mean, I don't believe in hurting any race or religion because of that. I just think, you know, sometimes a lot of facts get out, a lot of non-facts get out and starts rumors and starts getting agitation from people and things because they really don't know everything. It's just like Chris and I were going to talk today. I'm glad you're back so we can do that next time. But, you know, the benefits of turf grass versus artificial turf. And there's great reasons on both sides, and there's also cons on both sides. But, you know, over the years you hear all these stories, and I'm glad you brought this one up, because this is important, especially now in today's world. I mean, you know, I wish people would go gently on these things and have common sense to collect all the data and have honest discussions and things, instead of just all of a sudden bam, 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 and everybody gets up in modes and argues. I think that's the wrong approach. I from what you told me, it sounds interesting, like that could be true. I'm not saying it's not. I don't know anything about that. But, you know,
And some people just kind of object to development of some spaces, you know, because we are talking about a rural area and sounds like it's pretty nice. I mean, that's why they want to build a cemetery there. So there's, you know, probably some concern that, you know, just that it's not just the cemetery, perhaps it's anything we're going there, except perhaps a large estate house of some kind, you know. It's the loss of the open space, perhaps, you know, and the cemetery and burying bodies there is just the particular issue that they use, you know. It could be that, too. It's quite an extensive article that goes on. It goes very in-depth into it. I confess I did not read it all. It's a very long article. But it's an interesting, you know, it's an interesting thing. I haven't quite ever heard anyone express concerns over cemeteries like that. But most of the cemeteries have been around for so long, you know.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I know there's, you guys drive the 91 freeway. And by Imperial Highway and a little past Weir Canyon by Gypsum Canyon Road, they've been arguing for years to put a little military cemetery there. And you wouldn't believe all the stuff, propaganda that cropped up about that. So and that's at a piece of land that nobody's using, that's next, that overlooks the 91 freeway. But it seems today that anything anybody proposes is just going to get challenged by everybody else. So.
Yeah, and I kind of understand and sympathize in some respects, because, you know, people buy a house and we kind of have this expectation that nothing's going to change, but, you know, that's just not realistic, you know, and sometimes it's hard to see the landscapes around your home change, but that's
unless they think the cemetery's haunted at night. You know,
yeah, I mean, there will be too many ghosts.
Stories. Oh, you hear stories about that all the time. I mean, it's just crazy.
Okay.
Well, we're glad you came back today, and I hope you had a safe trip at Aqua. And we got to go to commercial break, but the stories I'm talking to the audience here, the stories that Chris puts out every single day are amazing. And she goes into quite a bit of detail. She's probably the most and best person in the industry to do that. And we thank her very much for being part of our show. If you want to go see her information every single day, go to www.mavensnotebook.com. You can become a subscriber and get information every single morning at your PC. I always say she must spend 30 hours a day. I don't know how she does it. And types everything all up and has it all ready by, I don't know, what time do you send it out in the morning? I get it pretty early, about, like 7?
9:05 about.
So we get it every morning, and it's awesome. And you can also become a subscriber, which is a good thing, and help her out for doing that. And, Chris, we do appreciate it. I'm glad you're back. I'm glad you visited your mom and she's doing well. And we'll be back with you next week.
All right. Good evening, everyone.
Thanks. All right, we're going to take a little break and we'll be back with our featured guest. So stick around for the second half and we'll be right back.
Get ready, because the forecast for this May through June is a torrential downpour of points. Site One is proud to introduce our exclusive NDS Point Storm 24 event. Partners program members who use drainage, hardscapes, and irrigation products can earn up to 4x the rewards in May and June for purchasing quality NDS products. That's 4x the points on a whole range of product solutions for residential and commercial projects. NDS is a leader in water management solutions and is known for superior quality and performance, as well as ease of installation and extreme durability. You can count on Site One and NDS to help you grow your business. NDS Point Storm 24 from May through June. It's the perfect storm of points and performance.
Welcome. You want to grow your business, and you're curious how installing drainage can help. Here's the good news. If you are currently doing irrigation or hardscaping work, you already have the tools you need to install drainage and add more profitability to every project. It's likely that you also have the leads to get started, because almost every homeowner can benefit from stormwater management. In this series, we're going to show you the most common problems and make sure you're equipped to address them. Drainage options from manufacturers like NDS are proven time and labor savers that protect landscapes and foundations, maximize usability of outdoor spaces, and prevent problems downstream. The key is installing the right solution for your customer, and Site One can help. Beyond a wide inventory of products, Site One and NDS have the resources to get you started and proficient as a stormwater management and drainage contractor, including Site One University training, NDS Professional Drainage Contractor certification, as well as technical and design support. Drainage protects property and the environment by reducing runoff and mitigating both erosion and pollution. Adding this critical service to almost any type of landscaping project can grow your business, keep your crews busy, and maximize profit potential. To learn more about stormwater management, review the resources on the landing page at siteone.com or ask a Site One associate. But first, check out the next video in this series to identify the signs and symptoms of drainage problems and recommend the right solutions.
Okay, can everybody hear? Everybody on board?
Yeah, we're good, Rob.
Sorry. We don't know why it lost. Anyway, I guess I should do the introduction again, and I apologize for that. We just had a little technical problem here. So I'm very invigorated and excited to have the next guest on, and his name is Moses West. He's a retired Army Ranger captain. He has dedicated his life to addressing the global challenge of clean water scarcity
And inspired by his military service, he developed groundbreaking technology to extract water from the air, which we call atmosphere water management. It's incredible, providing essential resources to vulnerable communities worldwide.
Yeah, Rob, appreciate it. For our listeners, sorry about the little audio glitch there, guys, as we came back from the second half, but we're back in good stead here. So you mentioned groundbreaking technology, Rob, and for sure, right? So Moses is dedicated to building a sustainable future, and he did indeed develop groundbreaking atmospheric water generators, AWGs, as they're known, if you guys like three-letter acronyms, or as Rob and I call them, TLAs. So you know, what this machinery is, it's a technology that extracts water from air, and it does it with fairly good proficiency, and I'm sure Moses is going to have the chance to talk to us about that and how it's done. But it's had a profound impact in providing essential water resources, especially to disaster-stricken areas and to vulnerable communities.
Yeah, and just to give a little bit more credibility, which I don't think he needs, but we'll give it to him. Beyond his technological innovations, Moses is an advocate for renewable energy, waste reduction, and sustainable agriculture practices. And as of 2023, the Moses West Foundation has been recognized by the United Nations as SDG Action 49191 in honor of Mr. West's vision for water sustainability. So we'd like to welcome Moses to the show. Moses, welcome to the Water Zone.
Hello. Y'all, thank you for the wonderful introduction. Great to be here.
And we apologize for the technical difficulty we had. We fixed it, so we're back on the air, and everything is great. So I know we gave you a little brief introduction, and there's so much more about you that, you know, I don't want to be the only one speaking about it. I want to hear it from the man and kind of tell us, how did you get into this and then get into the atmosphere water generators? I love that technology.
Well, it's a lifelong story to tell. I started out as a kid, a military brat, moved to Germany as a child before it was completely rebuilt up from the Second World War in the early 1960s. After I graduated from college and went into the military, my whole goal was to travel the world and become very technical at whatever I did, because I was always a tinkerer with things. And so when I was doing some traveling overseas and living in Australia after I got out of the military, I saw the effects of drought and how bad it was and how it was completely destroy a country if it gets out of hand. And I decided then and there to find a solution.
Yeah, your generators that you are into, I mean, what was the first purpose for it? Was it for a military application? Was it for a healthcare application? Was it for just scarcity of water in lands that didn't have availability of clean water or enough water?
The first reason that I came up with the technology to produce water out of the air was for humanitarian reasons. I was living in places where you know, groundwater was just completely depleted. And the first time I saw this technology was in a little machine in a neighbor's house in Hawaii on my last trip from Australia. And so I saw this little machine and I thought, you know, if this machine was bigger, this would solve a lot of problems in the country I just left. So humanitarian was my first, was the first reason behind it. The second reason behind it was the military, because the military is the one that gave me the opportunity to test it, evaluate it, and for their use. And they actually support the technology, very highly support the technology today, even more so than when I first started, because I was telling them years ago that this was going to be absolutely essential, and we're there now. So everything that I said was going to happen 10 years ago is happening today.
Can you give a little science behind this? I mean, Chris and I understand it, but maybe our listeners, because this is a great subject and topic to talk about. Like I said, this is one of my favorite topics that I like to talk about and hear about, of how it works. How does it make water? And do you have to put this in certain places? How is it powered? You know, all those kind of goody stuff.
Absolutely. Well, let's see. To start with, do you know that we have three sources of water? We have a liquid, we have a solid, and we have a gas. The only way water exists on the Earth. Water evaporates out of the ocean, it turns into a gas, it comes in atmospheric rivers, hits the Sierra Nevadas, and you all see the results of that. So all that water that comes down in rain in the atmosphere, you can build technology to take that water out and use it in the amounts that you need. And so basically what I'm doing is the same thing that happens up at the top of the Sierra Nevadas when the clouds hit that and the temperature is just perfect, the water comes out of the air. Well, I do that same thing at ground level inside of a machine. But what I've done with the machine is where the whole world was stuck in a Model T-type technology where they were just using straight HVAC to power the whole machine, and the bigger it got, the more energy it used. When I was in Puerto Rico, and just day after day sitting under the machine providing thousands of people drinking water, I said, pulling the water out of the atmosphere and condensing it is an absolutely fantastic idea. That's why I'm sitting here doing this, because I love what I do. I love tinkering. I love helping people. But I said, it's got to get bigger, because even though this machine is servicing this island of thousands of people daily on solar power, I said, I've got to make it bigger. And I figured out, I broke the code sitting there in Puerto Rico, how to make the machine large enough to supply a city or a town or even an entire coastal nation with this technology. So basically, you have a surface area, you get it to the right temperature, you control the airflow over it, and you produce water.
Wow.
Go
ahead, Chris.
No, Rob, I was just going to say, Moses, welcome to the show. Chris here. Just so happy to have you on. Rob and I have known about Moses West Foundation for several years and discussed it. We have a common colleague, Moses, in Thomas Schumann, your friend and mine, I'm sure. And he was on just a couple of weeks ago, Moses, and that gave us the inspiration to get you on the show. But boy, just great to have you on. We've Rob and I have looked at your work and seen what you've done over the years, and I have just a ton of questions, but. I'm sure we won't have as much time to do it, but I wanted to welcome you because, you know, you've given us a great kind of just an update on the technology. But I'm going to ask you first about Puerto Rico, because I think, you know, I manage the message board as we listen to this, and a couple of listeners are saying, was that related to the hurricane that was there? I'm sure that's why you were there, Moses. So let's ask that question first.
Absolutely. Hurricane Maria was devastating. Category 5 hurricane, Hurricane Katrina, I think it hit Category 5. But Category 5 is a new hurricane, and that hit Puerto Rico, and I was working with the military, and I was in Texas, and I had done a TV show, and when I was walking down the street, like, sometimes I have this very, very unique kind of beard that I wear, my bald head, and so people were recognizing me, and trying to give me money, and I couldn't take it. And so my attorneys, they said, you need to make a foundation. And so I made a foundation, and I took gear from the military, upgraded it, and that's where I took to Puerto Rico. And then the same type of gear I took to Flint, Michigan. So I was working with the military, who initially funded everything, got the public to fund it even more, and was able to go to Puerto Rico and actually save people's lives, and was actually able to go to Flint, Michigan and save people's lives and get people who were homeless back into their homes, because we provided people with hundreds of gallons of water so that they could clean their homes and move back in.
Yeah, you mentioned Puerto Rico. You mentioned Hawaii as well. But I know you do tons of other stuff. Education, you do outreach.
Yep.
You work with, the indigenous community, tribal stuff, where Rob and I just had a segment on the show, especially here in the southwest of the United States, where water rights are, are a big issue, and it's, you know, first in place, first in time with the tribal issues and all that stuff. So, you know, you say you've got a foundation, but I'm pretty sure, Moses, that that your work goes beyond just being a, you know, a little foundation. What are the key initiatives of the Moses West Foundation?
The key initiative is to teach everyone and to ensure that you know that you're never going to run out of water. We have this thing going on the planet right now where the number one issue is water scarcity. The goal of the foundation is to ensure that everyone will always have a clean source of water. Everyone will always be able to learn how to capture that water and everything that you can do with it. That's the sustainable, with energy, with the power to produce the water, and what the water can do is actually grow food with it as well. Organic food with no plastics or byproduct chemicals in it.
Yeah. Another part that's very interesting for everybody to understand about atmospheric water generation is that all the issues we hear about on the news, you know, on podcasts or whatever, you always hear about, you know, like PFAS and the forever chemicals and things like that, and those aren't in the AWG water. Tell us a little bit about how pure and how you get past the chemical issues.
Oh, absolutely. When we were doing in Texas, we were doing the pilot project over at Trinity University where I graduated. And there's a bunch of highways to come together. You've seen how smog the air gets around the highways, right?
Yeah.
Well, that's the air that we're pulling in. And so everyone said, well, we've got to test to make sure that you're not getting anything called HAPS, hazardous airborne particulate. There's another acronym for you.
Yeah.
And so pulling the air in, yep, these HAPS, hazardous airborne particulates, all the petrochemicals we burn, all the chemicals that we spray on the fields to kill the weeds and so forth. And so what we found was that the H2O molecules condensed out of the air at the dew point or some point below the dew point. And that's the only thing that the surface area is seeking out of the air. It's not seeking a benzene molecule. It's not seeking anything other than water. That's it. The air flows through in a linear fashion, comes out, and everything that came through the machine goes out with it, with that airflow, except for that H2O molecule, which comes down as rain inside the machine. So the plastic can't come with it, the chemical can't come with it, and then we go through several stages of carbon filtration, micron filtration, and then what you get on the outside is just pure water. It's just an H2O molecule that left all the filth behind, comes through a pure machine, turns back into solid water again, liquid water, and comes out to the consumer. And everything that was tagging along with it, hitchhiking along with it, that made it dirty, it's just left behind.
You know, a city in Mississippi can certainly use something like this. We've had the mayor and some other people on over the last couple of years talking about how poor the water is and how the state doesn't want to clean up the water, even though at their capital city, it's just terrible. People have brown water. They can't wash their clothes. They can't take a bath. I mean, it's terrible. You have all different sizes, but one of the things I was impressed about, you had a project called the Sky Wells Project. Maybe you can enlighten our listeners a little about that, because that was a pretty neat project you worked on.
Oh, the Skywells. I'm not sure about the Skywells project.
I thought you were. I thought that was a collaboration with indigenous tribes.
Oh, forgive me. Trust me, we've got so much stuff going on right now.
Well, that's okay. Tell us about the success stories that you have, and then I got some other questions like. How small can these things be? Can they put them on board ships? And I know you're going after the big machines and stuff, and they're solar powered, which is really awesome. I mean, there's so much to know about these things. You're right. What you were just saying earlier about getting rid of the PFAS and all the other stuff that's found in the waters, and this gives it much purer water. But there are certain conditions that I believe has to exist for this to work to its most capacity. And if you can fill us in on that, our listeners, that'd be great.
I will. Native Americans. Okay.
Yeah.
And making sure that we can get water in every situation. Okay.
Yeah.
In Canada, Native Americans very short on water. And the Skywell project from the Navajo all the way up to Canada, all the way up to Alaska, even in places where we think water is plentiful. We had to get the technology to be able to work in those places. So on Skywell project for Native Americans, what we're doing is I had to come up with a way that the technology would not only work where it's hot and humid, because you know that's where I produce most of the water.
Right.
But in the time that I've been working with this, I figured out we're always finding something new the longer you do it. And so what I found is a way to make this technology work from the Arctic all the way to Antarctica to produce water. So actually, if I put a system in Antarctica, I can actually produce water. There's a way to do it. And these are the codes that I'm breaking along the way. And this is one of the codes that I had to break, especially for the Navajo and the Native Americans that live in the arid region. And so what do we have? We have something called desertification. That's a mouthful sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
How the desert is encroaching in on our green land, correct?
Right.
Well, I found a way to stop that with water generators by producing water, pulling the moisture in the evening when the humidity rises up, growing plants that hold moisture, and so each system that sits out producing water, say 5,000 liters of water every night, and then growing plants around it, it grows like a mold in a petri dish. You've seen that in a petri dish when you have a bacteria growing in one spot, and then you get another spot and it starts to grow, and after a while, all those dots connect.
Right.
You see that visual?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Well, the same thing in a place where the desert is encroaching. What are these machines working on solar power producing 5,000 liters of water a day right there? That is the benign water production natural process happening right there that a human does not have to touch. You don't have to change a filter. You don't have to do anything. That machine would run that way. It would run that way for 10 years without breaking and produce millions of liters of water. What would that grow in that space? And you put these dots, the right radius out from each other, and you could stop the desert from encroaching in on an area, grow food, produce water, livestock, people. It's not that complicated anymore.
Well, I know your entity has done lots of different things for helping on disaster relief. I know one of the places that you did that was in Puerto Rico, and That was amazing. You can tell us a little about that. First of all, how do these things get transported? Because that unit has to be pretty large in size, physical size, and probably heavy, I would assume. How long does it take to get one of those things if there was a disaster and that had to be out? I mean, do you have a barrage of them in a warehouse ready to be shipped, or how does that work?
Well, if you were here with me in Chicago, I can actually show you how it's done tomorrow morning.
Love to do that.
Yes.
I'll tell you what I'll do. I'll take some video and send it to you.
Well, actually, that would be great, because we'd love to have that on the show, because NBC also broadcasts the show in video. Right now, if you go to the radio station, KCAAradio.com, you'll only see a picture of Chris and I with a logo. But if you had some of that would have been really interesting. Maybe next time you come back, we can go through that. Maybe we can have some of those videos to show our audience. This is a unique technology that's incredible and something the world really needs to have, and it's there for the taking.
Yes, it is. You know, when people stand around and they say, you know, there's no water here, I just look up at them and say, you know what? You're standing in all the water that you would ever need.
Yep.
And then they look at you like you're crazy. And then as soon as you I could show up with this big machine, and this is what happened in Flint. Let's talk about Puerto Rico. When I first went to Puerto Rico, and I said I was bringing this big 20-foot container, I was trolled so bad. It was incredible. I was called everything that you could think of, a charlatan. It's not that'll work. This guy's just here to take our money. I was hearing it all. And so when I show up on the spot with this big green container, and there's probably 30 people sitting in front of me, and I'm sitting at the machine. I extended it out, and I started it up running on its own internal diesel generator. Everybody was sitting there, and they were all deciding what was going to happen with me and this machine. And I just let them sit there and talk. And then I had a place to stay that night. This was the first night that I was there. And I had a five-gallon can that I needed to get water in because I knew their water was contaminated. So what I was actually doing was I was actually running the machine for a few minutes so I could make 5 gallons of water so I could get a ride to my house. And so everybody was watching me. I sat my bucket down, I pulled the hose out, and I turned it, and water came sprayed out of the machine and filled up the 5-gallon bucket. You could have heard a pin drop if the generator wasn't on.
That's awesome.
Shut it off.
Yeah.
Shut it off. Closed my little bucket up, jumped in the car, and went to the house that was donated for me to stay in. I tell you, I have never seen something shut a troll down so fast. There was nothing they could say.
Well, let me ask you this question here, because managing or reviewing the posting on the message board here for the show, Moses, there's a ton of people asking me, is there a limitation in under which the AWG technology will work? And I think what they're referring to is, you've talked about Puerto Rico, where we know it's very humid there, but what about more arid regions where the relative humidity is not so high, or dry regions and other places in the world where you don't have a water-laden atmosphere? Are there limitations at all? Can you kind of explain that for our guests?
There were limitations until you do enough research and development and find out ways to get past those limitations. The limitations of the technology did make it an equatorial technology, a place where you had to have moisture in the air all the time. But there's moisture in the air everywhere on this planet, even in the desert. When you go into the desert in the evening, after the sun goes down, the humidity goes up. How many plants live in the desert that collect the dew in the morning?
Sure.
That's on the plant. That Native Americans do it. We all know about it, how you just put some plants in a hole in the ground, put a piece of plastic over the top, four corners, and put a rock in the middle. You get up in the morning, you have a little bucket under there, and you have a few drops of water. Well, that moisture comes to the desert in the evening. And even in the Arctic, when it's snowing outside, the humidity is up 70, 80, 90% on some occasions when the snow was falling. And so what I had to do was figure out a way to get the coils to take the water at those temperatures. And how you do it is, what do we use to grow crops in the wintertime? What do we use? How do we do it? It's easy. We've been doing it for centuries. Greenhouses.
Yeah.
Greenhouses. You build large greenhouses in the desert. You put the largest machines that I can make, making, say, 25,000 liters, 30,000 liters a day, inside of a large greenhouse in the desert. You pull water in the evening when the humidity is high, and you capture that water in the desert. And that's how you change the desert from desert to forest, or desert to food production. You capture the water in the evening inside of greenhouses. That right there is giving every company in the world who ever wanted to do this the code to do it. That is breaking a code right there. Greenhouses exist. The atmospheric water generator exists. Join them together in the desert. Pull your air in the evening. You grow food and you produce water, and you can live in the desert where no one else was living before.
Wow.
You can see it. You can actually visualize that.
Wow. That's just amazing. I mean, there's such a need for something like this. I mean, like I said, we had some people on from Mississippi, and they were complaining how bad the water is. And Chris will quantify this. I had tears, literally, when I heard the stories from these homeowners who said they sometimes they don't even get a drop of water. And then when it comes, it's brown, and they can't use it. They can't drink it. They can't take showers or baths in it. Can't cook with it. And the state assembly there was saying, well, you know, you guys live too far from the treatment plan, and you'll have to come up with your own money to have the construction done to bring the water to you now, and blah blah blah. I thought, you know, especially in the United States, I think everybody who lives here has a right to water and a right to clean water, and it should be in other places. I mean, we're not talking things that are impossible. You know, everything that you said. You've conquered some of the algorithms and the methodologies to make a system that works in these kind of conditions, and that's an important factor. That's more than important. I mean, it's almost like a miracle, and people should be looking at this for ways to use it for the future, because, you know, we're not going to make any more water that's what's here on this earth. I mean, yeah, and as you said, the water comes from the
ground
and goes on top. So we're drinking water that is millions of years old, but we got to be smart about how we do it. And your system is pretty unique in that. The recognition you got from the United Nations, can you explain a little about that? What that's about?
Yes, the United Nations. Mr. Tingley, what he did was they invited me up to the UN to speak on the technology, pulling water out of the atmosphere. I've got to talk to ambassadors from both the African nations. I had a dinner with the South African ambassador. And right now we're moving forward with initiatives to get this technology in countries in Africa. And so the invitation to the United Nations is an ongoing open invitation for me to go there and speak about the technology and to introduce it to the African nations. African nations, global nations, anywhere where people need water. But I have to also tell you that we did take a machine to Jackson, Mississippi.
I was just talking to your head of operations, Apollo, and he had mentioned that to me, so I was going to ask you about that a little bit more. Yeah, I mean, all the things that you're doing are right. How helpful has the UN been in this endeavor? I know, you know, you've been recognized by that, but do they help participate in establishing contacts?
Yes, they do. Yes, they do.
Absolutely. Yes, they do. They absolutely do. And so right now, the UN has their hands full. And I've never had my hands so full as I do right now. This has been a long, arduous journey, but one that I have absolutely loved. But it's when everything that you said in the very beginning, when people looked at you kind of funny when you're saying the wheels were going to fall off the bus. Well, the wheels have fallen off the bus, but we're sliding down the highway right now without wheels. The number of floods, the numbers of fires and droughts, and the ocean temperature is so high right now, it's incredible. It scares me to think about it at night when I go to bed. It's cold up here. It's cold in the north. It's hot in the south. That's a nuclear reaction when that cold air hits that warm moisture. You're going to see an energy release like you've never seen before. You might see a Category 6 hurricane. Nothing survives Category 6. And the idea behind this technology is getting it out, getting it done, getting it finished. That is my goal right now, working with the United Nations, working with new manufacturers, continuously trying to innovate the technology, because I know the time is now where I need to be finishing this and getting this out. And it's actually happening faster than it was 10 years ago. I have meetings with different entities of the government, the United Nations, private investment. But what I want to do is just finish products so that it can get them into the hands of the consumers, city municipalities. You're in California, and you're saying that you don't have, people say you don't have water when there's a drought. I'm telling you, when I tell you this, this should shock you. When you're in the San Joaquin Valley in the fall, how dangerous is it to drive when that fog is out there?
Sure, truly fog. Yeah.
It's impossible to drive in the fog. I know, I lived in Visalia. Do you know what you're looking at right there? You're looking at all the water the San Joaquin Valley needs for anything that you do in that valley. That is water that is so easily, you can condense that water so easily because you can see it. You can see it in the fog. That is your easy water. When you stand on top of the Sierra Nevadas and you look towards the coast on a clear day when that fog is in the valley, there's pictures of it, satellite pictures. It fills the entire valley. That is all the water the San Joaquin Valley needs to survive the entire year.
Wow. Right there.
And it's there. You just have to condense it. And you don't even need you can do that with solar power and wind.
Yeah.
You don't even have to drill for water anymore.
What's the smallest system that you created? How much does that produce a day?
300 gallons.
Wow,
the smallest guy I do right now it's a military grade machine. The military uses it. It'll do 300 gallons. So I'm sure they put it in the right place. It'll do 500.
Somebody once told me, and I'm not a military guy, but in talking to some people, like they were talking about how enemies can track the U.S. military by sounds of motors going and engines and things like that. Is yours a quiet system?
Oh, you could track it by sound. What the military tells you that with their machines, there's no fuzzy electronics in it. Like, I'll build you a machine, and you'll be able to look at it on your cell phone and tell what the machine is doing. The military doesn't want fuzzy electronics.
Right.
The days of fighting like we did in World War II and World War I, those days are over. I was a ranger, and I could, go out in the woods and hide in the bushes, and you would never see me. Those days are over. If you got your little hot body out there, they're going to see you.
Moses, let me ask you this, because before we get to the end of the KNBC and the NBC News Hour here, if we've got we got a lot of followers, we get corporate people listening and stuff like that. If people want to get involved, they want to know more, they want to know how to contact you, you want to get some engagement or some advocacy going, where can people go, Moses?
You can go to the MosesWestFoundation.org and you can donate. Right now, I have appointments to make and places to be and things to do. The people of Jackson, Mississippi, there's a nursing home there. They need a machine. I've got a few machines right now, but all the machines I have are spoken for. I never raised enough money to finish a machine for Mr. Kitchen in the senior citizens home. I didn't. And you should see the picture of the young lady who's pulling water out of an atmosphere water generator for the first time. The look on her face it'll make you smile for the rest of your life. And
great.
That type of satisfaction is what I get out of this. So donate to the Moses West Foundation.
Well, Moses, thank you very, very much. We want to have you back and talk about some more stuff and see some videos, and we'll get in touch with your people to do that. And most importantly, thank you for what you're doing for the world. And again, what I think is even more, thank you for your service to the government. We appreciate that.
Oh, thank you for having me on. Greatly appreciate you.
You're welcome. All right, everybody, we're going to see you next week. And the most important thing that Chris and I always tell everybody is please help
keep our planet
blue. Because if you like green, you got to have blue. Good night. We'll talk to you next week. Have a good one.
NBC News on KCAA Loma Linda is sponsored by Teamsters Local 1932. Protecting the future of working families. Teamsters1932.org.
News Radio, I'm Brian Shook. A request to change Donald Trump's gag order in his hush money case is being denied. The judge late Thursday shot down Trump's argument that he should be allowed to respond publicly to adult film star Stormy Daniels now that she's off the stand. And the former president was not happy.
He's a corrupt judge. This judge, what he did and what his ruling was, is a disgrace. Everybody saw what happened today. He's a corrupt judge, and he's totally conflicted.